chronic pain and health disparity. That's the subject of this edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Dr. September Williams is with us. She is an internal medicine physician at San Francisco Department of Public Health's Laguna Honda Hospital and Rehabilitation Center. She is a clinical ethicist and a filmmaker, and she joins us now on the Bioethics Channel. Whenever it comes to health disparities in chronic pain, I guess where we start, September, is that we acknowledge that they exist.
That health disparities exist is an important feature because it's hard to nail exactly what a health disparity is. But I like to use the analogy that a health disparity is the equivalent of, I live in the Bay Area, it's the equivalent of two people getting in their car on the Bay Bridge on the Oakland side and driving across the bridge to San Francisco. One of them gets there in 10 minutes and the other one gets there in 5 hours. They don't get to the same place at the same time, though they put the same $6 in the toll bin. And the problem with that is that we don't exactly know why. But when you look at the person that it takes 6 hours to get there, there are certain features that are there. They may be people of color. They may be recent immigrants. They may have lower socioeconomic levels. Their car may have broken down. They may have had a stroke or a heart attack. We don't know exactly what it is, but we know it when we see it. And one of the things we see when we are looking at health disparities is that people have chronic diseases too early, causing debility, and frequently those diseases also have pain associated with them. So a 55-year-old has a physiology that is like a 90-year-old in terms of arthritis, hypertension, congestive heart failure, diabetes, which causes pain, and it's not treated adequately.
And that's not an issue that's distinct to the United States. That's worldwide.
It's absolutely true. One of the most important things about pain and chronic pain is that it's poorly treated internationally. With the advent of the worldwide HIV epidemic, chronic pain is the second most reported symptom besides fever in people suffering with HIV. There are ways to treat chronic pain. However, the medications and the therapies that we hold dear in the United States and in Europe are not readily available around the world. So it is an epidemic that causes suffering, that is tantamount to torture, and has concern because it takes away the productivity of people in countries where that productivity is much needed.
Then when it comes to research, we tend to, at least in the United States, as I understand it, focus the research on academic arenas, academic centers, where a lot of the people who are suffering from this particular kind of problem are more in the public setting. And that's a problem too, isn't it?
I think it is a problem that there is information which people who practice and receive care in public hospitals, in community health clinics, in long-term care facilities where the majority of people are Medicare or Medicaid, have a perspective and an orientation on what needs to be researched and approach to that, which is not frequently allied with the research that is done in academic centers. It's odd, but the two don't talk to one another that much. People frequently train at those facilities, but they do not train to be there and working in those facilities. It is just a survey kind of training, and therefore they do not understand or have an opportunity to do the kinds of in-depth research that can be done in the university. And that work never gets done. Also, because the workers in the public sector are, of course, massively overworked. And the idea of adding research to the plate is as unfathomable in the standard workday of a doctor or nurse in a large public hospital setting.
September, you're participating in a roundtable today in Kansas City on these pain issues, and one thing that you said in there that struck my ear was it ain't about black and white anymore. It's multicultural. There are a lot of layers to it.
That's true. I mean, culture, I'm also a filmmaker, and what we say about culture is it is the way in which people define themselves, not the way in which others define them. So when you look at culture, inner city poor people as a group may see themselves as a part of one culture, depending on the neighborhood that you live in. If you live in the Mission in San Francisco, you see yourself as someone who is from the Mission, and that has a whole cultural series of things related to it. But we also find that we are not talking about in any major American city, whether it's Omaha, Nebraska, or San Francisco, you are going to see black people who may speak two or three different languages, Asian people who speak two or three different languages, Vietnamese, Chinese, and so on and so forth, that the world is shrinking. One of the important things about public medicine that we really realize is that we are connected by our patient population to their home countries, to their home cultures, even in the United States, and that we are all experiencing things together, and we are. So the question is really not about culture, it's about cross-culture and our capacity to do it.
One of the suggestions, approaches that you brought up today was the need for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, much along the model of what happened in South Africa some years ago. Talk about that.
Well, I think that there are times in history where physicians are required ethically to actually provide testimony to the things they have witnessed. When you start looking at the kinds of numbers that are associated with chronic pain and realize that you're looking in some estimates up to 150 million people are daily living in pain in the United States, when you look at that and you realize that you are unable to treat that, even though we may have tools for it, there is an obligation to begin to state that we don't have full tools, we don't have full access for people, and the poorer people, the people of color, the people who are victims of healthcare disparity diseases are actually the people who are suffering the most with chronic pain. So that requires that we say it out loud. We say it out loud to our patients, and our patients need to be able to say it out loud what their experiences have been and the ways in which they suffered. So this is at an epidemic level that is so close to an atrocity that you want to look at how we're going to resolve these conflicts by first being honest about them. It also deals with issues around drug diversion and inadequate management of pain that people may feel bad about. But there are regulatory and legal issues associated with all of the things that are related to opiate use, whether legitimate or non-legitimate, that need to have the pressure pulled away from the legal and regulatory issues so that people talk about what it is to be in a practice where they are pushed against the wall to try and provide proper care for people that may be on the edge of the regulatory monitoring system.
You're a filmmaker.
I am.
How do you use filmmaking to inform what you do, and how do you use it to advance the cause, so to speak?
Well, I personally tend to be rather verbose. So I use filmmaking to listen. I use film viewing to listen. I believe that narrative in and of itself has an enormous power. It has a healing power. Human beings have told stories for centuries. They have painted narrative stories. They have done drama that are narrative stories. Well, film is more than one art. It is called the seventh art because it includes all of those things, all of those narrative forms that seem to be so close to human beings, from dance to poetry to theater, are all in film. So there is a special power to film. It has the capacity in the modern world with the digital revolution to allow for people to see and hear images that may resonate with them and may help them feel more comfortable to come forward with their own issues to their own family members, to their doctors, and to open up the dialogue in a way that won't be do it. So individuals may be depicted in films that can actually open up the dialogue for people who identify with those individuals. That's the way film and even television works. The characters strike a chord inside of other people who they identify with, and then they use that as a point to go places where they would otherwise be afraid to go.
Dr. September Williams is an internal medicine physician at the San Francisco Department of Public Health's Laguna Honda Hospital and Rehabilitation Center. She is a clinical ethicist and a filmmaker. September, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
My name is Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.